Hello and welcome to The Bookmonger. I'm John J. Miller of National Review. Thanks for listening. This show is a production of National Review, and we're recording from the studio WRFH, the campus radio station of Hillsdale College. Our guest is Dominic Green, author of The Religious Revolution, The Birth of Modern Spirituality, 1848 to 1898. Dominic, welcome to The Bookmonger.
John, thank you very much.
Why was the second half of the 19th century such a rich period for religion and spirituality?
Well, I think there are two or three reasons. One of them is the creation of what we would know as globalization, because the late 19th century, like the last decades of the 20th century, saw a really globalized culture. The second thing is a long-term trend towards greater and greater individuality in religion and also, of course, in politics all over the Western world. And if you combine those two things, then you have a model for the emergence of something which everybody now knows about, but people then didn't, which is spirituality. Everybody seems to be convinced they have it, and everybody is hard-pressed, of course, to describe what it actually is. And I've foolishly taken upon myself the task of explaining what it is and where it came from. Because if you go back a little before that, if you go back to the early part of the 19th century, well, there are occasional odd people like, say, William Blake, who make their own spiritual and political systems. And then there are people, say, like Ralph Waldo Emerson, who declares himself as going beyond Christianity and launching a new kind of individuality and a new kind of person. And of course, that sounds oddly like the socialist program to make a new human, which is also a 19th century notion. So I suggest that there's a sort of tipping point in the second half of the 19th century. Lots of ideas which had been wacky and certainly not much to do with politics suddenly become very political. And it's those ideas that eventually, I believe, come to fruition in the 1960s in America. So it's really an account of how we got where we are now as much as how they got to where they were then.
So explain exactly what you mean by spirituality, and is it different from religion?
Well, yeah, religion is something which is managed with institutions and has, a creed. Spirituality is the inner voice. Now, the inner voice, of course, is always there. It's what religion is trying to awaken in many ways. But what happens in our time is when the inner voice goes against society, the institutions, whatever, the inner voice is correct. The institutions are wrong because we have become convinced that the personal is always political and we don't like to be wrong. And this is a very modern, very Western, in some ways very liberal in the traditional sense. It's the individual deciding what's what. And at the foundation of it, you could say, is this Enlightenment belief that we have rational minds and that we're capable of judging and governing ourselves.
You have an epigraph in this book from Ralph Waldo Emerson, and in that epigraph he says, quote, "The religious impulse is the most revolutionary principle in human experience," unquote. That's a pretty big statement. What does he mean, and why did you make that your epigraph?
Well, I'm with Ralph on this one, obviously, but to my mind, when we think of, say, the American Revolution, we tend to think of it in terms of the creation of the Constitution and so on. But if we look at it in the wider picture, it grows out of the thinking of English republicanism and the English Civil War. And we look at the origins of that and a lot of the ideas of the rights of the individual, particularly the right of conscience and speech. Those are explicitly religious ideas out of the Reformation. History of the 20th century, of course, is littered with examples of governments which have tried to crush their religious impulse from people in terrible ways and failed almost every single time. This seems to be something innate, this meaning building, system building, some sense of transcendent purpose in our lives. This seems to be an innate human characteristic. And I think Emerson's point, and it's one I'd endorse, is if it's innate, you have to learn how to use it and direct it to the proper ends.
There was so much going on in this period that would seem to oppose religion, or at least question religion, make it hard for religion or spirituality to flourish. I'm thinking of industrialization, urbanization, the spread of Darwin's ideas about revolution. Did these factors paradoxically contribute to the spread of spirituality?
Yes, they did, because all of these things, as you're rightly saying, they broke up the patterns of the old world and the old ways of doing things, and they undermined the old institutions, the old monarchies, the traditional place of the church, and so on. And the result was, of course, that we were still the same individuals. We still had the religious impulse, and then it's directed to other things, in particular, towards this thing which was an invention of the 19th century. They called it society. There was no concept of society in that way that we have it before then. All of these hopes, all of these ambitions, all of these passions have been directed into politics, in particular into political parties, you know, and there were no political parties before the time of the American Revolution. Edmund Burke, you know, one of the greatest of philosophers when it comes to thoughts about religion and psychology, Burke was part of setting up what we now think of as the first modern political party, the Earl of Rockingham's Whigs, during the time of the American Revolution. So a lot of the mental furniture that we think has been around forever, politics in particular, is actually a fairly recent innovation, and it has come to replace the religious institutions. I don't know if it's made us happier.
Dominic, one of the things I like about your new book, The Religious Revolution, is that it's a character-driven account. We meet Emerson, we meet Thoreau, Whitman, all kinds of folks. Tell us a little bit about your method here. How are you telling the story of the birth of modern spirituality?
Well, John, I was one of those people who went to graduate school in search of, how to do history the right way. And I found myself sitting through these very arcane seminars in what seemed to me a load of nonsense. It's very clear to me that until the day before yesterday, really, people were convinced that individuals had the power to change their circumstances and to affect how history goes. And when you look at the 19th century, it's very, very clear. The individual does count. The individual makes all the difference. And my game was to take a sequence of these amazing, talented, and frequently nutty figures and use each one as a vehicle to describe an element of the great changes that were taking place, to show how their ideas might have prefigured ours, to show how you can have a mixture of scientists and religious thinkers, and how they'll very often be working towards similar ends. And I think this is how we experience our lives as individuals interacting with each other. And it makes a lot more sense to think of history as being composed of the acts of individuals than it does to think of it as being the battle between institutional powers or the isms of 20th century history, whether they're Marxism or capitalism or whatever else. The individual is first and last, really.
The present always emerges from the past, of course. And earlier you suggested that these trends in the 19th century helped create the 1960s and our own world today. Draw some of those lines for us. How is that true?
Well, I mean, one thing that happened in the 19th century, which had never happened before, was people wanting to go back to the land. If you look at the history of the previous 5,000 years, a lot of it was composed of people trying to get away from agricultural labor and to find a safer and less taxing form of life. The 19th century was the first point at which people got so educated that they thought it would be a good idea to do like Ben and Jerry and go, you know, to Vermont and make artisanal ice cream. That whole micro industry, back to the land thing began then. We're looking at the beginning really in this period of feminism, of socialism, of gay rights, and above all, perhaps, of racial science and race theory. Because the anti-racism of our day is really little more than the racism of the 19th century put in the mirror. And that's one reason, of course, why it creates such trouble socially, why people are so upset about it, because it is basically the old racism, but back to front.
The final line of your book is, quote, "The religious revolution is not over," unquote. That probably sounds ominous or hopeful, depending on your perspective. What do you mean by that, though? What might happen in the 21st century?
Well, this is a big question. I wish I could write another book about it. In fact, I might have to write another book about it now when you point this out. Firstly, the trends that I identify are definitely ongoing. The number of Americans, and Americans, of course, were the standout in the West. They were still conventionally religious people, where, say, the Europeans had given up on church going. Americans seem to be trending away from institutional religion. More and more of them call themselves spiritual but not religious. More and more of them do things things like practicing yoga, more and more of them believe in reincarnation, which was, again, a fringe belief a couple of hundred years ago and is now pretty much nearly half of Americans believe in. All of these trends are ongoing, plus all of the forces which create these sort of changes in how we see ourselves, all of those things are still going. Technology, of course, has erupted into our lives in recent decades in the way that in the 19th century people spoke about it. You know, in the 1820s, Goethe said, you know, everything is so fast these days. Everyone's in a hurry trying to catch a train. And there are similar complaints in the following 200 years, really, until right now. And so all of these processes are ongoing, and that means that our idea of the soul, of religiosity, of spirituality, all of these things are going to continue to develop in this way quite rapidly. And that means there will be political changes, too.
The author is Dominic Green. The book is The Religious Revolution, The Birth of Modern Spirituality, 1848 to 1898. Dominic, thanks for joining us.
John, thank you.
Thanks to all of you for listening. If you enjoyed this show, please take a minute to leave a review. Your reviews help new listeners discover us, and that helps us keep this show going. We'll be back next week with a new episode of The Bookmonger.